Last week I mentioned that when we reflect on 2017, it was a big anniversary year for Israel. It has been 50 years since the Six-Day War, 100 years since the Balfour Declaration, 70 years since the United Nations voted in favor of partitioning Palestine to create two states and an official Jewish homeland, and 100 years since the ANZAC forces with Australian Light Horse Brigade liberated Be'er Sheva from the Ottomans and ultimately laying the groundwork for the future establishment of Israel. As I mentioned to you that I came across an incredible article I thought was very interesting, written by Richard Haass, former U.S. advisor on foreign policy. He writes that the world marked the 50th anniversary of the June 1967 war between Israel and Egypt, Jordan and Syria, a conflict, he says, that continues to stand out in a region with a modern history largely defined by violence. The war lasted less than a week, but its legacy remains pronounced half a century later. I thought it so interesting, so I'd like to read to you what he's written. What he says, the war itself was triggered by an Israeli preemptive strike on the Egyptian Air Force in response to Egypt's decision to expel a United Nations peacekeeping force from Gaza and the Sinai Peninsula and to close the Straits of Tiran to Israeli shipping. Israel struck first, but most observers regarded what it did as a legitimate act of self-defense against an imminent threat. Israel didn't intend to fight on more than one front, but the war quickly expanded when both Jordan and Syria entered the conflict on Egypt's side. It was a costly decision for the Arab countries. After just 6 days of fighting, Israel controlled the Sinai Peninsula and the Gaza Strip, the Golan Heights, the West Bank, and all of Jerusalem. The new Israel was more than three times larger than the old one. It was oddly reminiscent of Genesis. 6 days of intense effort, followed by a day of rest. In this case, the signing of the ceasefire. Richard Haass writes, "The one-sided battle and its outcome put an end to a notion that Israel could be eliminated. The 1967 victory made Israel permanent in ways that the wars of 1948 and 1956 did not. Most Arab leaders came to shift their strategic goal from Israel's disappearance to its return to pre-1967 war borders. The Six-Day War did not, however, lead to peace, even a partial one." Richard Haass says that would have to wait until the October 1973 war, which set the stage for what became the Camp David Accords and the Israel-Egypt Peace Treaty. The Arab side emerged from this subsequent conflict with its honor restored. Israelis, for their part, says Richard Haass, emerge chastened. And there is a valuable lesson here, he added. Decisive military outcomes do not necessarily lead to decisive political results. The 1967 war did, however, lead to diplomacy. In this case, he says, the UN Security Council Resolution 242. Approved in November 1967, the resolution called for Israel to withdraw from territories occupied in the recent conflict, but also upheld Israel's right to live within secure and recognized boundaries. The resolution was a classic case of creative ambiguity. Well, Richard Haass says, different people read it to mean different things, and that can make a resolution easier to adopt, but more difficult to act on. Richard Haass writes, he thus comes as little surprise that there is still no peace between Israelis and Palestinians, despite countless diplomatic undertakings by the United States, the European Union and its members, the UN and the parties themselves. To be fair, he says, Resolution 242 cannot be blamed for this state of affairs. Peace comes only when a conflict becomes ripe for resolution, which happens when the leaders of principal protagonists are both willing and able to embrace compromise. Absent that, no amount of well-intentioned diplomatic effort by outsiders can compensate. But the 1967 war, says Richard Haass, has had an enormous impact all the same. Palestinians acquired an identity, an international prominence that had largely eluded them when most were living under Egyptian or Jordanian rule. But Palestinians could not generate, he says, what was a consensus among themselves regarding whether to accept Israel, and if so, what to give up in order to have a state of their own. Israelis could agree on some things. A majority supported returning the Sinai to Egypt. Various governments were prepared to return the Golan Heights to Syria under terms that were never met. Israel unilaterally withdrew from Gaza and signed a peace treaty with Jordan. There was also a broad agreement that Jerusalem should remain united and in Israeli hands. Richard Haass concludes that agreement stopped when it came to the West Bank. For some Israelis, this territory was a means to an end, to be exchanged for a secure peace with a responsible Palestinian state. For others, it was an end in itself, to be settled and retained. Richard Haass concludes that many Israelis and Palestinians have come to recognize the reality of one another's existence and the need for some sort of partition of the land into two states. But for now, the two sides are not prepared to resolve what separates them. Both sides have paid and are paying a price for this standoff. He says, beyond the physical and economic toll, Palestinians continue to lack a state of their own and control over their own lives. And Israel's objectives of being a permanent Jewish democratic, secure and prosperous country is threatened by open-ended occupation and evolving demographic realities. Meanwhile, says Richard Haass, the region and the world have mostly moved on, concerned more about Russia or China or North Korea. And even if there were peace between Israelis and Palestinians, it would not bring peace to Syria, Iraq, Yemen, or Libya. 50 years after the 6 days of war, the absence of peace between Israelis and Palestinians is part of the imperfect status quo that many have come to accept and expect. That was written by Richard Haass, former U.S. advisor on foreign policy, and this article was published in The Strategist. So if you Google The Strategist, you will find this article. And I'm very interested to find out what you think. 50 years after the Six-Day War, what is the future?